Well, we are in week 11 of a 13-week series, taking a pause the next 2 weeks to look through 3 John. But we've been talking about money, possessions, and eternity. Again, we've been taking this from Randy Alcorn's book, most of it, not all of it. But today, we're going to look at a topic called debt. Very popular topic in our country, at least for taking it. But we have to ask, what does the Bible say about debt? And you might think, well, that's really not that important a topic for church. I mean, maybe there's some general ideas, but if you want to talk about debt and saving that we're talking about, really who you need to go talk to is a financial counselor or a banker. That's who should be talking about this, not a pastor or Sunday school teacher. And on some level, I'd have to agree, if you're talking about how to save, then I'm not the expert. You shouldn't talk to me. You should go talk to someone who's studied those areas. But I will argue that most of our financial problems are not a lack of knowledge, but a lack of spiritual maturity. So let me give an example why I say that. In 2007, 2008, you know, there was the recession in our country, and the wealthiest county in the state of Texas was, not Tarrant County, Collin, thank you, Collin County. Except, it was also number one in one other thing, bankruptcy rate. So you would think, I mean, this is northern Dallas, Allen, Plano, McKinney, that area. You would think, okay, well, they got money, they have good jobs, and this area with a high education rate, well, that's why people have debt, because they aren't that smart, or they don't make that much money, that's why they have debt, or they don't know how to spend it. Well, actually, they had all three of those, and they had the highest rate of bankruptcy. Because the issue often, no, not always, sometimes not, but often the issue is not knowledge, it's spiritual. We put our value in things that aren't ultimate. And that's a spiritual problem. Now, my point is not that only Christians can make good financial decisions. There's plenty of people who aren't Christians who make great financial decisions. But my point is that the deeper the values and our beliefs are in what's right and what's honorable and good, the more we'll live away in our money and our debt and our saving that will honor God and be helpful. And on that level, the Bible has a lot to say about debt. So if you have one of these little outlines in front of you, see where we're going. But first, we're going to see that the Bible has strong warnings and advice against debt. Now, this may come as a surprise to you, but most Christians throughout time have said that debt is sinful. Not unwise, not the best, but it's wrong. Now, we need to realize that our source of authority is not church history. It's not what a pastor says. Our source of authority is the Bible. So we need to go, okay, well, why did they say that debt was sinful? And we'll look at that. We'll look at a verse here. But I think Randy Alcorn says it well. He says, considering that only a century ago, it was generally considered a sin for Christians to go into debt, it's amazing that credit cards, to pick on one aspect, have been so widely accepted in the Christian community. Excuse me. So why did Christians believe this? Well, let's turn to Romans 13:8. Here's one key verse that was often quoted. And Keith, when you get there, would you read Romans 13:8 for us?
Owe no one anything except to love each other, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law.
All right, so you may have heard of Hudson Taylor, famous Christian missionary to China, or Charles Spurgeon, probably even better known in these circles, famous Baptist preacher about 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago. They both quoted these verses. I mean, owe no man anything. That seems pretty broad. Nothing, anything. So we should never have debt, they would argue. However, I don't necessarily think that's what they're saying. So let me give 3 reasons why. One, is we looked and took the broader time to look at the context. The context is not talking about money, talking about other things. And so while that might be an implication of these verses, that's not the main point. Second, turn to Exodus chapter 22. Let's see. Kara, would you mind reading for us? That'd be all right. Exodus 22:35. And Maddie, could you turn to Psalm 37:26 for us and read that? And Ty, could I have you turn to Matthew 5:42? Oh, well, that would be a challenge.
What version are you reading, Pastor?
25, perhaps?
Probably so. There you go. Thank you. That's more helpful.
If you lend money to any of my people with whom he was poor, you shall not be like a moneylender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him.
All right, so here it's giving instructions on how to lend money to your brothers. And we're not building a bank policy here. This is family relationships, saying if they need money, don't try and make interest off them, help them. However, it's interesting. It's giving principles for how to loan money. Now, it doesn't say, hey, if your brother wants to rob a bank and ask for a gun, give it to him. Because you go, well, no, that's wrong. So no matter if they ask or not, I'm not going to give it. But here, it's and by implication saying it's okay to be someone who's a loanee. So it's okay if someone needs money to be indebted. Or Psalm 37:26, hopefully we have the right reference here. Would you mind reading that, Maddie? Okay, thank you. Thank you. So it's talking about a righteous man. It says he's ever lending generously. So if it's unrighteous or sinful to take or give a loan, how could this be a righteous man? But here's saying he's ever lending generously. Or Ty, I believe you had Matthew 5:42.
Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you.
All right. Again, another kind of straightforward verse that's saying lend. That's a good thing to do. So, as you can see from the little bullet, I would say debt is not best, but it's not necessarily wrong. I don't think we should put it in the category of sin. And we'll talk more about what this looks like. But we also have to realize just because something's not sinful, there's other categories to think of things. Sometimes all people want to think of is the moral category. Is it right or is it wrong? But there's also categories of, is it wise? Is it good? Is it better? Is it best? Or maybe it's none of those. But that doesn't mean it's sinful. You know, I don't know that it's sinful to go get a Frosty and fries and eat it every day. But if you do it every day, after a while, you're going to be unhealthy. But it's not a moral category per se. It's a wisdom issue. So let's look at some verses. All of these are in Proverbs, so you could probably flip. I'm going to have various people read them. David, could you read 17:18? Jesse, could you do 22:26-27? Amy, I'm going to give you a long one if you don't mind. 6:1-5. And Sarah, 22:7. So starting with David, 17:18.
One who lacks sense gives a pledge and puts up security in the presence of his neighbor.
We don't really talk in these terms, but to bring this to our day, what is a pledge? What is it talking about that might be something we do in our culture?
Contract.
Close to contract.
Co-signing.
All right, co-signing. What's co-signing?
Being a financial backer for somebody.
Yes. Also trigonometry function, but that's a whole different discussion. Anyways, mind blown. That's another cosign. Cosigning, someone said it, is when you need a loan and you do not have the credit or credit history to get it. And so they go, hey, you got good credit. Will you cosign? And then the lender will go, okay, because this other person, we trust them, will give you the loan. Now, I don't think this is talking about a child who's never had credit history. You know, we do credit in an interesting way in our culture. But why would it be unwise to co-sign for someone? Yeah, because what is the lending institution basically saying, more or less?
If he defaults, you're responsible.
Okay. But why are they not letting this person have the loan?
They don't have good credit.
They don't trust them. And these are people who all the time are loaning money. And if the people who do this all the time go, you know what, this isn't really the type of person we should loan money to, they probably know more than you.
Well, but it also could be that they're a young couple and they've never borrowed money before, but you know that they are trustworthy. I would not co-sign for someone that I didn't think would pay.
But there's a difference between no credit and bad credit. So.
Well, that's what I said. I think they're on...
Credit or no credit?
That's what I was saying. With our way we do credit in our culture, I don't think it's applied to... child who, you know, you have to build up credit, which, you know, you could have someone who has $400,000 in the bank, but if they ever have a credit card or anything, they go, well, they don't have good credit, we can't give you a loan, which to me makes no sense. But nonetheless, that's the way lending institutions do it. So that, I think that's a separate category. But the person, your friend who has bad credit history, and go, oh, I really can do it this time, I think it's saying, warning, this would, again, would it be a sin to do it? You know, maybe you do know their history and you know you could help them. But I think he's saying it's not wise. So, anyway. 22, 26 through 27.
Be not one of those who give pledges, who put up security for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should you, your bed be taken from under you?
All right, again, similar idea. Don't be giving these pledges. This could be for someone else or even for yourself. Or Proverbs 6, 1 through 5.
My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger. If you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself. For you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the
So here, this is a person who has taken a pledge, either for someone else or for themselves, and they realize they can't fulfill it. So saying, look, you need to get out of this situation as soon as you can. Don't try and deny it. Go to whoever you've made this promise to and talk to them about it. Try and get out of everything you do. And the last one, this is a famous verse, probably you've heard it before, Proverbs 22:7.
The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender.
One... church father Cyprian said, their property held them in chains, chains which shackled their courage and choked their faith and hampered their judgment and throttled their souls. They think of themselves as owners, whereas it is rather they who are owned, enslaved as they are to their own property. They are not the master of their own money, but its slaves. So to summarize and then we'll reflect on this, I think we could say that the Bible's view of debt is that though debt isn't wrong, should be entered into cautiously and paid off as soon as possible. But let's reflect on this last verse. How is the borrower a slave to the lender? That seems kind of strong.
You're responsible and accountable for the terms of whatever the contract is. So if they say you must pay by this date, you must pay by that date. There's consequences for that.
Okay. Okay.
I think the weight that it bears on you until it's done, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a heavy burden that's always there until you pay it off.
Okay.
There are notorious lenders also. I mean, there are some people who need or think they need money so desperately that they will go borrow from unscrupulous individuals and, you know, risk their life if they don't pay, and they really do become a slave to that one.
Yeah. So why do you think we're so quick to say, though, whenever we have financial problems, well, I just don't make enough money. And that's what I always hear people say. Why do you think that's what we say?
Because it sounds less, it makes me feel less responsible, and it's easier than saying I live outside of my means.
Yeah. Well, there might be other reasons. I mean, could it be true that they don't make enough money?
Yes.
Or they're not handling their finances.
Yeah.
Well, consider this. In, I want to say San Francisco, The poverty level is $100,000+. I think it's San Francisco. It's either San Francisco or Oakland. Yeah, they don't make enough money to live there.
I don't quite understand how you, let's see, on Proverbs 6:1-5, so we'll know, like, if you're taking a pledge but can't fulfill it, try to get out of it. So you're meaning like in not bankruptcy, get out of it, or what's the point there exactly?
I'm just showing, was trying to show, maybe didn't show, that the Proverbs is giving warnings against debt. That if you're in it, you should get out of it as soon as you can.
And that's particularly the co-signing situation. The guy's going, you need to get yourself out of that. Being bound to that other person to pay off their debt. Try and relieve yourself of that.
So you're not actually paying it, you're just...
Yes, but there's you've made a pledge. You're on the line for that money. And the Proverbs is saying, get out of that.
Which I would say is in both levels, in contrast to our culture where we're extremely comfortable with debt, no problem, have no sense of urgency to pay it off, it's just there. So why do you think modern Christians have a different view of debt than prior generations of Christians?
Well, isn't the common thought that you go to college, well, in order to go to college, you ain't got the money, you borrow a bunch of money.
Let's become the common thought. Wasn't 30 years ago.
I think we're so much wealthier than the Christians of the past that even in our debt, we're still living comfortably. And to, for many, I'm not going well, to even to suffer financially because of your debt would still feed your children and provide for.
Yeah. We could reflect on more. Let's look at the next thing. Let's look at reasons for debt. And I think we could say generally many people need loans, or they think they do, and have debt not for essentials of life, but for wants and luxuries. Now, considering all we've said about debt, what we've seen that the Bible said, we should see it as very abnormal. But the average credit card debt for the middle income family in the U.S. is almost $16,000. So, and if you're in that situation, I'm not here to cast judgment on you. I'm just here to say that's not what the Bible is saying is the wisest way to live. Because credit card debt especially is not the type of debt that you normally have something you could sell for, like a house, where you could get your money back. And it's normally an extremely high interest rate. It always shocks me. Maybe we have some high bills, maybe a credit card statement with a couple thousand that we've always paid off when we get it. But nonetheless, you can pay back $25. I'm going, what? I have like a couple thousand that I owe, and you're going to let me pay $25? Because they want me to pay 25, because then they're going to charge me interest on all of this. And sometimes it's like upper teens, 17, 18, 19%. I mean, if you could go make an investment like that, you'd be doing great. And so, yet, here, this is the average credit card debt. This isn't like these are the people who, boy, when they come in for loans, the bankers go, oh, that's, no, you got about 16,000 credit card debt. Okay, that's normal. That's the norm. And again, you normally don't use credit cards for cars and houses, which are what you need. You know, so these are more wants rather than needs. Now again, there could be a time where you are in that situation because of crisis, whatever. I'm not here casting down bolts from heaven. Hopefully you're not feeling that way. But what does Proverbs 6 say? Get out of that situation as quickly as you can. But second, let me say a couple more other things about this. Randy Alcorn says, you know, the IRS calculates that the average filer spends 10 times more paying off interest on debts than he gives to charitable causes. So we think this is no big deal. It's not really hurting me, but 10 times as much going to pay off interest on credit than we give away. It's a scary thought. So why do they want us to have credit cards? Well, Citibank calculated that if they have two buyers, or consumers as we call them, consumer A and consumer B, consumer A has cash, consumer B has credit, they go in the same store, cash, credit. Credit guy, on average, spends 26% more than cash guy. Because you've probably been like me. You use your cash, you get home, you look, you go, where did it all go? And then you think through and you go, well, we went here and here. And you go, yeah, I don't have that much left. And then I go, I got to be cautious for the rest of the week or month. Credit card, once a month you go, where did it all go? So am I saying the Bible says you can only use cash and credit cards are wrong? Not at all. But maybe it might be helpful for more people to go, look, I could, on average, save 26%. If right now someone walked in this room and said, I got a way you could make 26% more money, you'd be dumb not to say, I gotta leave Sunday school for a minute. How do I do this? You know, that's an incredible amount of savings. But because we love easy credit, we're kind of lulled into this. All right, now, so the second thing is some debt, I would argue, is not necessarily unwise. Maybe it could be better or worse. We'll talk about that. But you know, it could be an investment or a house. You know, most people aren't independently wealthy. And if you're going to start a business, most people don't have the capital to go, here, I'm going to have $250,000 to buy a property, get signage and all this. So, you know, if they have a good plan, I could foresee that that might not be unwise. Or a house. You know, houses cost a lot of money. And most people coming out from their homes do not have $100,000 or a little bit less or a lot more, depending on what you're getting, for a home. But, again, both of those, a business you can sell, a home you can sell and normally get it back, whereas you can't sell your meal after you go out to eat, or normally you can't sell your clothes for the same amount of value or other things like that. Now, I was brought up college, and, you know, for many, college has been kind of a rite of passage in our culture. You've got to go to college. And I think for many people, college is great. However, we should maybe think about how we do college. And you can go to Vernon, go to other community colleges, have a bill of like $2,000-$3,000 or less a semester. I don't know, something like that. Okay, $2,600. So $5,000 a year, or I'm not picking on Baylor, but I just know Baylor. You go to Baylor, $50,000 a year. Do that for 4 years, that's $200,000. Now, you can get scholarships. I went to a four-year institution. But maybe we should pause and rethink and go, is it good to leave college with tens of thousands of debt? And most of this is happening not because of school costs, but college student doesn't want to work while they go to school. They want to live in nice apartments. While I was at A&M, it was amazing all these super nice apartments that were going up all around and getting used. I mean, in most dorms, you know, used to you go in a dorm and they have like 20 dorm rooms. If you split up this, you know, they're all super tiny and it's like you and the other guy in a bed and a sink and that's about it. Now, everyone wants apartment style dorms. Okay, well, why do we have to live luxuriously in college? And then just say, well, I'll pay for it when I get out. Well, we could live like we used to. So all that's not to say you can't live in apartment-style dorms, or you can't go to the four-year institution that costs a lot. You might have scholarships or other things. But maybe we should rethink it and go, maybe I could go to community college for a couple years, save money, work while I go, finish up at a university. And I'm just saying, let's think about other options. But again, I would put college in the investment category and not a right. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but we'll move on.
And then there's those who college just does not fit for any reason or other. It seems nowadays anyone who works with their hands as a carpenter or something like that, or who becomes skilled craftsmen, are not considered much of anything anymore.
Yeah, which I was going to jump down, but I stopped my rabbit trail. Shot that rabbit. So you chased it for me. He escaped my bullet. But yeah, I think Tom makes a great point. There, you can have a great living being a craftsman who doesn't go to college. And you could start right out of high school.
Yeah.
And
plus that, the employer pays for the training. And then here's another thought, too, on that. You can go to college and never learn how to work on your house. Well, guess who you got to hire?
Yeah. So there's lots of good reasons we should not denigrate skilled labor. And if you haven't taken economics yet, supply and demand. The supply of skilled laborers is going down because we need to go to college. So what happens when supply goes down? The cost for them goes up. So skilled laborers are making more and more money, making very, very good salaries, especially if you can start young and maybe even after a few years start your own company. You can make really good money.
There's a case in point. I was working in Florida on condos for a while, and there was this plumber there. And he was, he went to school to learn how to be a lawyer, passed the bar, the whole bit, and he made more money as a plumber than he did as a lawyer.
Yeah, there are those situations. Well, good stuff to think about as you talk to your kids about the future. But let's think of four deeper problems, why we often have debt. And the first one I would argue is we think as Americans we're owed a high level of comfort. You know, commercials are telling you this all the time. The culture around you tells you this all the time. You know, what do we want? We want little effort and maximum pleasure. Thus, you look back to prior generations, we eat out more, we get bigger and nicer TVs, we have flashy cars, we have expensive clothing. And again, we're talking about wisdom. None of those things, am I saying, is a sin. But it might be unwise. It might be putting you in a financial strait. It might be hindering your ability to be sacrificial and give to others. A second reason I think we have debt is we believe we're our own. You know, we say, who I am is what I wear or do or own. That's what our image is wrapped up in. You know, more people care more about what people think of their outfit when they walk in the room than what those people think of their character. And so what does that lead to? If our identity is in what I own, then that's going to lead me to want to buy, buy, buy. And again, that's not a need to talk to your banker. That's a spiritual, deeper level issue that you got to resolve. Or third, we think the most important opinion in life is ours. What do I say? With others coming a close second and God not even in the equation. You know, there's very little thought of, how does God think about the way I'm using my money? Well, if I want it, why shouldn't I get it? It's my money, we say. And fourth, we think what matters most is today. And we have little concern for the future. And we see this as a nation. We're piling literally trillions of dollars of debt onto future generations because we want to be compassionate today. Well, are we really being compassionate if we're crippling our children and grandchildren, or are we just acting compassionate? You know, yes, I'm not trying to get all the way we should use our money as a nation, but the way we are putting debt off to the future, someone is going to have to pay that debt. But we don't want to think about that. What's going on today? And yet wisdom says, well, no, I got to think about not just today, but the future.
Concept of delayed gratification is almost absent from our culture.
Yeah. And that's, again, a deeper level issue, which is not go talk to your financial counselor.
Buy it when you have the money to buy it.
Now, let me read through this last little part, and then we'll have some questions. So here are some questions that might be helpful to reflect on before going into debt. Is this an essential item, or is this a luxury? Second, these are on your page, so you don't have to write them down. Will this limit what I can do in the future because I've promised myself to this debt? Now, this is not for everyone, and it was mainly because of God's grace and provision for us. But Sarah and I were committed that during seminary, we weren't going to take out loans. Well, why? Well, because if you come out of seminary with loans, then you can't say to every church, well, I'll go there, because you might say, I'm sorry, you don't pay enough. I got this debt right here and can't afford to work for you or work, be called to serve your church. So we got to think about, is the choices I'm making today affecting my freedom in the future? Again, Proverbs 22, you're enslaving yourself. I am promising you for X many years, I will work and earn this much money because I've promised you that. I don't think you can take this too far, but it's worth considering. Third one, can I take this debt while not saying what will happen tomorrow? James 4:13. Who are you who says tomorrow I'll go buy this and do this? Your life is but a vapor. Instead, we should say, as the Lord wills. Now, I think you could really stretch that way beyond its meaning, but it's worth reflecting on. Am I promising more than I am able as a human to promise? Fourth, am I wanting the benefits of quote-unquote being rich without first putting in the God-ordained means of work? Fifth, have we spent so much on wants that now we don't have enough for needs? And lastly, do I have to get as much as the bank will let me, or could I get a smaller loan? So if you go in, you want a car or a house, they look at your credit, they'll say, okay, you could, we'll just say, car. Okay, we'll give you a loan for $40,000. Do you have to get a car for $40,000? Or could you go, well, really, I could get a used one for $10,000 and I'd be happy.
I really think it's such a disservice, too, especially to young kids. I mean, you know, Ty and I, when we went to buy our first house here, we were like, we can afford how much? Like, you know, you get pre-approved and they tell you, and we were stupid and bought, you know, well, what didn't seem stupid at the time when we thought I was going to work, but when God said, hey, I want you to stay at home with your kids, suddenly our, you know, two-income house on a one-income family was not so easily affordable. And it's like, when we went to buy our next house, they told us what we were approved for, like, we can't afford that? Are you crazy? Like, we knew. The guy that Ty talked to, he went in and told him our budget.
Yeah, like, I told him, like, I want this price with taxes, everything included, how much is that? And he was like, he was amazed, and he was like, you're doing really smart. Yeah, you know, like, nobody does this.
I don't know how to do it that way.
Yeah.
Well, and they, you know, but we were approved for, you know, we could have gotten a loan for twice that much, but it's like when you sit down, you know, I feel like, you know, high school especially does you, at least public high school, does you such a disservice of saying, you know, like, yeah, they teach you how to budget a checkbook, but nobody really says, like, you know, all your bills and all the things and planning for emergencies. And, you know, I didn't realize that when I needed to get new tires on my car, it was going to cost $400. I mean, you know, things like that that you just, they really set, it sets you up for failure so quickly to say, the bank tells you you can afford this, but really, if you don't know your budget, you can't.
Yeah. And then you're a slave because you need the new tires and you can't say, well, bank, can I take a month off from this? And I can pay you twice next month. No. You are locked in, guaranteed. And so, you know, hopefully, you know, you've never had loans before. You're taking this in going, hey, I don't have to live up to what I can. I can rein myself in because, you know, maybe you do need a car. It's an investment to get you to work or whatever. You need a house to live. But be cautious in those things. All right, so reflecting on this, why is debt such a problem in the U.S.? Or why does our government have such a large debt?
I would suspect strongly because someone's selling you an idea and you buy into it.
All right, so either ones I've said, or are there other ideas that we're buying into?
Well, consider a home. Everybody says everybody has to have a home, okay? So the bank lends you some money. And you say, okay, that'll work. Do you realize how much rent the home's going to cost you over the years? Do the math sometime. $100,000 loan over the years, over a 30-year period, will cost you somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000. And once you pay it off, you don't have a home worth $50,000.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully you took good care of it.
Hopefully.
The flip side of that is the home is an investment. You can either pay rent and own nothing, and your rent is going to generally be about the same, or you can pay it in their house, where at least you do have some equity there.
Yeah, and then these are where we go into Christian wisdom, Christian liberty issues. Some people, I have a friend who makes way more than I do, who still rents a home because his viewpoint is he's researched. He thinks it's better to rent. Sarah and I have thought, for us, the wisest thing to do is to buy. And, you know, but in both of those, we're looking at as what's being good stewards of our money, not saying, hey, how can we live to the highest level of our income? So, you know, there's lots of matters where Christians might disagree, but we could all say off the principles, but having debt for wants, not needs, feeling like your identity is wrapped up in what you own, those are ungodly ways to live. So what are other reasons, either our country or in the U.S., debt's such a major problem?
We care too much about what other people think, and we're too, and like with social media now, everybody's, you know, all up in your business, and we care too much about what other people think. I would, you know, always want to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
I think part of it, too, is convenience. You know, because for example, for us to move into Wichita Falls would be more convenient. We'd be closer, the kids would be closer to college. It'd be closer to just, you know, things in the town. So, convenience. And then when you think about moving, you think about where do you want to live. And so, convenience. People want to have it easy.
Okay.
In the government, you see politicians appealing to emotion. You see political groups appealing to emotion. Well, don't you want to help the poor? Okay, yeah, sure, I do want to help the poor, but is that the way we should go about it? And do I want to strap Emma and Kara with the debt of helping the poor today, 30 years down the road, as the national debt continues to pile up?
I think with credit and electronic banking, the cash versus credit, like you said earlier. So it's really an abstract idea. So maybe we don't put the gravity and the weight in it that we expect, where it's just the idea where we can front all this money now and we'll pay it off later. Well, you never see the exchange. And so
just numbers on a screen.
Yeah, it's numbers on a screen, and we do whatever with them. And so you don't really see the end result where, okay, it is time to pay your debt.
Ty and I went through the Dave Ramsey program, and we started doing it before we'd ever actually taken the class, and in an effort to pay off our debt years ago. And I didn't really, and neither did Ty, we didn't really appreciate that in like the cash system, you know, the whole idea that you don't value it as much because it's just numbers on a screen and it's so easy to just swipe your card. And when we switched and started using cash instead, we had like our electronic envelopes, you know, but when we switched and started paying off cash, it took 6 more months and we paid off the rest of our credit card debt. It went that fast because it really does make such a difference to say, holy cow, like I just, you know, to see how much money you have left, like you were saying, you're like, and now we, you know, you eat what's in the house for the rest of the week because there's no more milk. Like, too bad.
Yeah.
Well, it's this concept too of what my net worth is. Well, what purpose does it serve if your net worth is $350,000, but you got to borrow $10 so you can buy me lunch?
Yeah. So, not going too far into this, but what are maybe some practical steps to get out of debt or stay out of debt, and then we'll jump into saving.
Win the lottery.
Win the lottery. I think you've completely soaked in the core idea of this lesson.
Go in the military.
There you go.
Get a job, yeah.
Okay, get a job.
Get 2 jobs.
Yes.
Budget your money.
Okay, budget.
Yeah. Have a husband who won't let you buy anything.
Have a wife who doesn't always go and buy anything. Sorry, for the first 5 years of marriage.
Reassess your means of living. How comfortable do you need to be?
Right.
And I said adjust your budget, reflecting your budget.
Yeah. When jumping off what Shauna said, I've often found it's not the big ticket items, it's all the little things that snowball into debt. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, you know, you asked about paying off debt, like means to your process to do it. we didn't even see it as that big of an issue until we looked at it from a scriptural standpoint. You know, we didn't take it seriously to pay off our debt until God got a hold of us and said, hey, like, you're not being good stewards of what I've given you.
Yeah.
It really does hamstring you and your ability to do anything else, charitable or otherwise.
When you talk about what can you do, we sold our house. I mean, because we couldn't afford to live, you know, if I was going to stay home, we could not afford that house anymore. It got to the point that, you know, there was, if we had an emergency, the funds were drained. It was gone. We sold our house, bought a cheaper house so that we could pay off all our debt, which, you know, in the long run, put us in a position to be able to adopt our kids and be able to afford to buy a house that, you know, fits us. But most people are not willing to do that, to say, I'm going to sell this house that I love so that I can have more money to put towards paying off debt.
Yeah. Well, let's look at three last sets of verses and look at saving. Corbin, would you turn to Proverbs 6:6-8? Elaine, Proverbs 21:20. And Katrina, turn to Luke 12. Because the scriptures are doing two things. They're warning us against debt, but they're also strongly encouraging saving for the future. Proverbs 6:6-8.
Go to the ant, O sluggard, observe her ways and be wise. Which, having no chief officer or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest.
All right, so Auntie is looking at the day. It's a nice hot day. We should go to the beach. But something in the ant, God says, goes, it's not going to be a nice hot day all along. Winter's coming, so I need to work today while I can to store up for the future that's coming. And God praises this. It is exactly what Keith said earlier, delayed gratification. They're probably kicking it up with like nice little fires in those anthills in winter. Sitting there roasting their little auntie s'mores, going, hey, good thing we worked this summer. We can sit here and, what do you call them? We want to watch shows? Binge on Netflix. There you go. They're down there. You don't see them. They're out down there vacationing. Because they worked all summer when they could. They planned ahead. Or Proverbs 21:20.
Precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it.
And now here there's this contrast. One person has precious treasure and oil, the other doesn't. Why does one have the precious treasure and the other doesn't?
One saved and one didn't.
Yeah, one delayed too. And it's not that they both didn't have the resources to get it. They both got it. It's that what did they do once they had it? One just, take it all right now, I want it. And the other said, save, important. You know, wait for the future. And so he still has precious treasures, oils. The other one's going, I don't have anything.
Every now and then you'll see an article called, like, Five Habits of Wealthy People. And those five habits are simply biblical principles. You know, I don't buy a Lamborghini or driving a used car, or they're saving. They're intentionally saving the biblical principles.
Yeah. And Randy Alcorn again says, although we live in the most affluent society in human history, which is true, 85 out of 100 Americans have less than $250 in available savings when they reach age 65. Now, that's available savings. Some of that is maybe stored up. But nonetheless, you know, if they had to get money, they couldn't get it. But as I said, though this is difficult, we need to make this a habit in our budgets. Saving isn't just something that's going to naturally happen. And so we need to invest for the future. Again, I'm no financial counselor. It might be helpful to talk to someone like that or go to something like Dave Ramsey. You can go for free at Texoma Credit Union. Or talk to others. But, you know, think about ways that you can create a budget or reallocate your money or rethink so that you can be storing up and saving. But, you know, the point is not just saving, because there's this interesting story here in Katrina. Sorry, I gave you a long passage, but she's going to read it for us. Luke 12:13-21.
Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentiful, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasures for himself and is not rich towards God."
You know, we have to be careful, because in all this we can become Christians with good biblical financial principles. And you can have all the right principles and have lots of money saved up, and yet that's not the main point. You know, the main point is, are you being rich towards God? Are you saving up not just earthly treasures, but are you storing up spiritual treasures that will last forever? As Jesus says, where moth and rust don't destroy and where thieves don't break in and steal. And so, you know, our message is not, hey, we can show you how to use good biblical principles and make money. Well, okay, maybe you could. But ultimately, there's something deeper going on. You know, are you living in a way that's honoring God, that's storing up not just money or resources, but storing up for an eternal future?
And like in all things, there's always a line. Anything you do too much is out of balance, and anything you do too little is out of balance.
Yeah, and then, so that goes to what we were saying earlier. It takes wisdom, because where that line might be for you might be different than for Jesse, might be different than for Cade. You know, every one of us has our family situation, our futures that may look different, what we have to save up for, the amount of money we have saved already, what we have. So, yeah, we got to go, okay.
And there's one other thought in this.
Yeah, go ahead.
It seems that this gentleman who had all this stuff thought that he did it.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't do much of anything. It's God that gives the increase.
Yeah, it's a good, very good point, Tom. Thank you. We're wrapping up on time. Any thoughts as we wrap up, comments, things that you found helpful or think we should emphasize as we wrap up this lesson? What?
Stewardship. It's a matter of stewardship. Our money is not ours, or things are not ours. As Tom highlighted there, it's God's.
Yeah. All right, well, any other comments or questions?
Yeah, there seems to be this strange concept these days. It doesn't seem to be much work ethic anymore. When it comes to when someone wants a house painted, they complain because the painter charges them too much. Well, paint it yourself. But that doesn't seem to be much of an option to anybody, because when you paint your house, you get paint on it, and your clothes, and so on and so forth. Well, it's back to life. Get over it. Either that or, well, like both, pay the painter.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the, we don't want to delay our gratification, because that's going to take work that right now I could be inside watching videos or doing whatever. It's delayed gratification. Now I'm going to give up probably a week to scrape this house and paint this. You know, oh, look at all the other things I could be doing right now. They're out here painting this dumb house. But it might be the best stewardship of your money to paint it yourself. Now, it might not be, so I'm we're not. Got it?
It is weird, though, thinking about that, like, you know, talking about, like, sitting inside, watching videos or whatever. When you're done doing that, you're like, oh, I just wasted my day. Gross. But then, you know, if you did work, you're like, oh, I hate this. It's terrible. I don't want to do it. When you're done, you're like, I did good work.
Yeah. Kind of weird.
Which is weird, because the whole time before that, I need that reminding, because
I really hate doing it.
The problem is, I still catch myself being, I don't know what
it is. All right, we better pray quick. We're getting feeling guilty here. All right, let's pray. Lord, I do pray that this wouldn't just be good financial tips, but we would realize that one day we'll stand before you. And have we used our life all of our life, not only our money, but also our talents and our thoughts and our energy, building up for our time with you. Lord, may we see the treasure there is in you. Lord, may we, if we are struggling with our finances, have the humility to reach out to others so they could help us, so that we could not just save, but be freed up to be generous and to share as you love. In your name we pray. Amen.
And so he'll...